Time now for the Phenology program. On Tuesday mornings, we hear Phenology with John Latimer. John's away this week, and Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. Can't think of a better pinch hitter for John Latimer than Pam Perry. Pam was a non-game wildlife biologist for many, many years with the DNR, and she used to do a monthly program with us on the birds and wildlife of northern Minnesota as the seasons passed. Welcome back, Pam Perry.
Good morning, Scott.
Glad to have you with us this morning. And I don't know what it's like down there. Are you getting any rain? It looks like you might have a little better chance than some of the northern spots. Are you getting any rain this morning?
No, but it's so humid. It just feels like it could rain at any moment. So, you know, it's right up there. It's just sticky and warm, even though it's not as hot as it's been. The humidity is way up there.
Okay. Well, I don't think you're going to get much relief over the next couple of days. Say, Pam, before we dive into birds and frogs and deer flies, we had a call from Ed in Deerwood an hour ago, and he saw a new hatched-out snapping turtle on a bike ride yesterday, and he said that this little critter was way far away from a lake, and but he thought it looked to him like he was heading in the right direction for water. He was saying to turtles, they must naturally know which way to go, huh?
Yeah, they have to know which way to go. It's built in for them. That's part of their instinct. I don't know if they smell it or feel it or what, but they have to get to water because they are, aquatic type species and semi-aquatic. And yeah, they have to head that way. And you know, I have to say about hatchling snapping turtles, adults aren't very attractive. They're not that cute looking. But baby snapping turtles are really cute.
All right.
And when I found them, they're just, the size, a little more than a quarter or so in size, and they have a big tail, and they're cute. Of course, I like lots of critters, so.
Yeah, you
do. And to pick things up and look at them, but not big snapping turtles.
So if you do pick up a baby snapper, will it bite you?
I've never had one try to bite.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
their mouths just aren't that big yet. They're not. They're kind of focused. They're new to the world, and they're just kind of looking around and want to get some water. So.
All right. Ed also wondered how does a female snapper or a female turtle in general select a place to lay eggs?
I don't know exactly, but certainly they have memories from where they hatched. And where they went and where they've gone in the past. And they look for sandy areas because the site has to be incubated by the sun, to warm it up. And it's instinct, and they just know, and they will go some distance. So, and they could come from a wetland or a lake or a pond, yeah.
All right. Well, we came upon, on a walk recently, we came upon a big deep hole that some critter had dug up a bunch of turtle eggs and eaten them all. Is that is that common?
Yeah. Oh yeah, really common.
Okay. So.
Raccoons and skunks are probably up here our main egg predators on turtles. And they can smell it. And I remember one of the biologists from Camp Ripley telling me they were watching a turtle lay its eggs, and there was the skunk already right there. Waiting just for the female turtle to get done laying them. They're there. They're on them really, really quick. A major predator on turtle eggs.
Well, Pam, let's turn to birds, because yesterday I had a magical moment when a female cardinal landed on my back deck, and I hadn't seen a cardinal in over a year. And we've had a lot of great birds at our feeder, though, all spring long. And now I'm seeing a lot of small brown, I think they might be purple finch hatchlings, or is it too early for fledges?
Oh, no, that's one of the things I want to talk about, is there's the babies. A lot of them are out of the nest, and that's what people need to be watching for, are these what we call fledglings. They're new, out of the nest. Most of them are about the same size as the adults, but often their tails are shorter. They're drabber. They act kind of like they don't know what's going on. And sometimes they're following an adult, or the adult is feeding them, and sometimes they're on their own. It all depends how long they've been out of the nest. But we're right in the midst of this major baby season right now. Lots and lots of fledglings out there. And at my feeders, I've seen young downy and hairy woodpeckers, pileated woodpeckers, and I'm expecting young cardinals any time now. So, and what else have I had? Nuthatches, fledgling nuthatches. So it's almost like every day I see a new different kind of fledgling.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to watch for them and watch the behavior. Often they'll look a lot like the adults, but sometimes they look different. Blue jays, for example, I noticed that they have like a paler face. And some of them sound different. I hear baby crows. They kind of make a mewing or baby sound,
mm-hmm.
and they'll be traveling in groups like that. So, but last week, Harry was talking about how the song is less, the bird song in the morning. And, of course, bird song, it has to do with territories and getting everything set up and doing that. We still hear some bird song, but it's not like it was. Now it's baby season, and the bird, a lot of the birds are quieter, and they're just taking care of their youngsters. So that's what's going on with them.
Yeah, and you described the fledglings perfectly for the kind of birds I've been seeing, as far as a little bit smaller maybe than the parents, kind of drabber looking, and also making... looking confused at times, and
looking confused,
yeah, and also making odd little sounds.
Sometimes they'll make those different sounds, and certainly purple finches in the Grand Rapids area, you'd have lots of those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have cardinals here regularly, so that's why I'm expecting the young ones to be coming in here really soon.
Now,
haven't seen them yet.
Now, are the young males more drab colored?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, they look more like females.
Now, I know we have
And the bills aren't orange. You know, you have to, when you look at cardinals, when they go into breeding season, the male and female, the bills get really bright. And so the youngsters on cardinals, they have a more plain bill. And it'll stand out. And they don't have the crest, as much of a crest.
Okay.
They'll have just maybe a couple feathers sticking out of the back of their head.
Well, I know.
And they change quickly. They change quickly. You know, within a month, you know, they'll look like the adults. But, you know, right at the beginning, if you look close, you'll see the differences.
Well, I know we have a lot of woodpeckers around the station here and also around my house and feeders. But I'm wondering, do you do anything special to feed woodpeckers? I hear pileateds more than I see them. I hear them all the time because of that distinctive call. But do you have any special thing you do to feed the woodpeckers?
Oh yeah, in the summer like this, I do peanut suet cakes, and I put one of these square suet cakes out. Now I bring it in every night because I don't want to attract bears. We do have a lot of bears here too. In fact, I bring all my feeders basically in every night during the summer, and then I also do peanuts. I have a peanut feeder. They seem to really like peanuts, and those are like just a real popular summer food. So the peanut suet cake, and then I have another feeder that's just peanuts, and I'll put loose peanuts out too. So very popular in the summer.
I eat a lot of peanuts when I'm watching the baseball. I wonder if the pileateds would like baseball, watch a baseball game. Yeah. Oh, well. Stick that idea.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to mention about birds right now, besides the fact that it's baby season, and you know, for all of us, we just got through the 4th of July summer week. You know, we're thinking we're right at the peak of summer. Well, I got a message yesterday from Kevin, who is used to be on the phenology show from the Forest View Middle School Bird Club when he was in school. So that goes back a ways, and we're still very, very good friends. And he sent me a message that he was over by Mille Lacs and that he saw a couple of yellow legs and a couple other small shorebirds, very small shorebirds. And you know what? That's the beginning of the fall migration.
Oh, my.
Yeah, exactly. And so most people, we think, well, we're right in the top of summer. This is not it. Well, for shorebirds, and then towards the end of the month, we'll start seeing warblers move around too. But these are birds that are either didn't nest, were unsuccessful nesting, maybe younger birds, they start moving around and you start seeing them because yellow legs don't nest in Minnesota.
Mm.
You know, they nest way up in Canada. And so these are birds starting to move around already. And the fall migration is sort of leisurely. It isn't as rushed as the spring one. When in the spring, birds are really anxious to get back to their nesting territories. In the fall, they can kind of go here, there, and take their time going south. And they'll do that. And I usually think of it starting the end of July. But this report, when he sent it to me yesterday, and I went, oh, really? This is early. It's already starting.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, are there any species that nest late and hatch out late and fledge late? What would?
Yeah. Goldfinches.
Goldfinches? Okay.
Yeah, goldfinches are one of the latest. And that's because they rely on seeds. They're seed eaters, and they will be nesting, now in July and even into August.
Oh.
They really like those late, and John could tell us when all these things seed out, but because they're eating seeds, their main food source is towards later in the summer, and that's what they want to feed their babies. So goldfinches are a prime example of late nesters. You have early nesters, you have late nesters. And they all time it according to what food is available for them and what their main food is.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Isn't that interesting? So it's all about getting the food in and the harvest.
It is.
And, yeah.
It is.
Well, now,
yeah.
It seems to me I've had goldfinches at the feeder year-round. Is my memory wrong, or do some of them stay year-round?
It can stay year-round.
Okay.
It depends on the weather.
Okay.
I tend to have more in the summer, but then I'll get some. And it depends when we get those really, really cold days. I think those cold spells. I think many of them head a little further south.
Okay.
And go down. So.
Now, one of my favorite birds that I haven't seen, I think I've only seen one or two on my bike rides this summer so far, but one of my favorites is the northern flicker. Have you seen any of them, and what's their habit of nesting and fledging and migrating?
Well, they've been nesting now. They're cavity nesters like the other woodpeckers, and I don't see them a lot. They're really quiet, but I see them, I think I saw one a week or two ago. They're round. They're just really quiet. And many birds, when they're nesting, become very quiet because they don't want to attract attention to their nest.
Sure.
Or lead predators there. And that makes sense, too. So there's some around. We'll see more when we get further into migration. And we get the ones from up north coming through. They're round. They're just not very many.
All right. Well, let's turn to frogs, because I know you wanted to say a few things about frogs today. What have you been observing with frogs?
Well, I have this, in my house, I have a walkout from the basement. And so it's kind of lower with some steps coming up, or you have to take some steps to get up to the ground level from that part of the basement. And I always get frogs down there because they kind of hop over the side and then can't figure out how to get out. And so I put water down there so they don't dry out. And then I have a board so that they can hop out if they can figure out how to get up. I think I got like 5 steps or something. And it's for little frogs, it's just enough barrier that it's like a trap for them. And last week and some days before that, I had it full of little wood frogs. And these little wood frogs they're just tiny. They're barely an inch, and they were just, every time it rained, and we've been having so much rain, I'd go down and check, and then I have to catch all these little wood frogs and throw them out of this area. And so what's interesting about wood frogs is that they're one of the first frogs to breed early in the spring. They're one of the very early ones you hear in the very first calling season. They lay their eggs, and then they hatch very quickly. And so here's all these little frogs. These are all new froglets, as they're called, that have metamorphosed from tadpoles into little frogs. They're hopping around. They're coming out of the wetlands and moving into the woods. And I've got woods all around me. So here comes this wave of little wood frogs coming through, and they're so cute. But they're the first. I also caught a couple little toads down there. And so the toads come out fairly quick, too. And, again, they're tiny, tiny little toads. And then I'll get more as the season progresses and as other frogs metamorphose and go through that change from aquatic to terrestrial. But it's very interesting. And yeah, I think one time I was, if anyone would be watching me trying to catch all these little frogs out of this area, you know, because they're tiny and they're quick. Yeah. And they hop. They can hop really a lot. They just can't easily find their way out of this area, and I don't like them to get trapped down there.
Oh, sure.
Now, get them out of there.
Are the wood frogs the ones that we might see on the window at night when there's a window by a light, and once in a while you'll see this small frog attached to your window, probably grabbing a few insects? Or do you remember? You know what I mean? Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Is that a wood frog?
What you mean? And no, that's not wood frogs.
What is that?
Wood frogs can't do that. Wood frogs are a true frog, and they do not have the suction things on their feet. Wood frogs live in the woods, and I find them in the grass, and you have to be careful when I'm mowing and stuff. And
oh, yeah.
All that. What you're seeing are the great tree frogs.
Oh, okay.
So some people call them toads. They're not toads. They're tree frogs, and they're in the tree frog family, and they have the little discs and on their toes, and they can climb up the glass. And we'll see a lot of them probably later this month, and then as we get into August, you know, late summer, you start seeing. I've seen one on my glass door already, but we'll see a lot more as they also come out and become more active and get out of where they metamorphose, so we get all the youngsters out.
We're speaking with Pam Perry. She's pinch hitting for John Latimer this morning on the Phenology Show. Pam's a retired wildlife biologist. Actually, you never retire from being a wildlife biologist, do you, Pam?
No. It's with me forever. All this stuff in my head and I love critters. I love being outdoors. I love all the living things out there. I'm not as good at plants the way John is. Phenology and all that. But, you know, I definitely, birds and frogs and things like that are really interesting for me. And, you know, I want to talk a minute about deer flies.
Well, you know what I was going to say? John Latimer never complains to me about anything outdoors except for deer flies. So you're talking about one of his the only wild nemesis I can think of that bothers John Latimer.
Well, for me, too.
Really?
Me too. I don't complain about hardly anything. I like all this stuff. I even find snakes really interesting and all that. And, you know, spiders are okay. That's all fine. But deer flies? Oh, man. I live in sandy area, and we get deer flies. And this year, they're really bad. They're really, really bad.
Okay.
And so John and Harry were talking about deer flies last week, and they were talking about the sticky tape you can put on your cap to catch them. And then they said, well, you can't use them if you have long hair. Well, I have long hair, and I do use them.
Okay.
And that's what I wanted to tell everybody out there, is that you can use them. You just have to be really careful. And what I have to do is braid up my hair really, really tight, and then pull the cap down, you know, tight over it so it doesn't fly around, because you don't want these patches around loose hair. Because your hair gets in there, you got the sticky stuff all over you.
What is the sticky stuff?
They work. What is the sticky stuff? It's on the patch.
Oh,
So I use a patch that's called Treadknot Deer Fly Patches.
Where you get it?
And you peel the backing off. You stick it on a cap, so it's on your head, and on the top of your cap, on the back top. And it catches the deer flies. You know how they circle around your head and then they'll land on a high point? Well, they land on your cap and they get caught. And yesterday I was mowing the grass and I put a new patch on. And so it was really sticky. I caught 9 deer flies within less than an hour. And they're all deer flies that would have bit me otherwise, probably. So, and I really don't like getting bit. So these are readily available for anyone out there who has deer fly problems. I was checking on their website yesterday. I've bought them at the Wild Bird store here in Brainerd. And there's many other locations around Brainerd that carry them, including Ace. And then because they have on their website, if you Google just deer fly patches, this will come up, and it's called Treadknot. There's also locations in Grand Rapids where you can get it, usually hardware stores and things like that, or like Fleet Farm, those kind of stores. But lots of places carry them because they are so, the deer flies just really make it unpleasant for gardening or mowing the grass or things like that at this time of the year.
All right. Well, before we go, Pam, you and I used to visit, as I mentioned at the beginning, every month, talk about different topics in wildlife, especially non-game wildlife, migrating birds and things like that. And we always took time out to remind people that the Non-Game Wildlife Program is supported by the donations from Minnesota citizens. And even though it's not a tax time and chickadee checkoff time, anytime is a time you can donate to that program. And tell us more about the Non-Game Wildlife Program.
Oh, I worked for the Non-Game Wildlife Program for over 30 years, and it's just an absolutely wonderful program. It's like a nonprofit, sort of, within the DNR. And our leader, Carol Henderson, and he's still working, by the way.
Wow.
He hired me. I worked over 30 years for him. And he's still working because he says that he still has things to do. And his big project right now has to do with getting money from the BP oil spill. You know, everyone remembers that, right?
Uh-huh,
from the oil spill down in the Gulf.
Uh-huh.
And they're they're giving out money now. Carol had submitted a big proposal about the effects on looms because our looms go down to the Gulf. And we're going to get money for different. There's a big plan. And since I'm retired, I'm not involved with it anymore. I just kind of track it a little bit so I know enough what's going on. But they're going to do good things for lakes, and especially loon lakes, deep water lakes, Lake Shore, different things. And, of course, then there's the Loon Center that's proposed for Cross Lake, too.
Yeah.
And some of that money might go for there. But certainly that BP oil spill has had long-lasting effects. And I know I just heard a report not that long ago about how it's still affecting some of the microorganisms in areas in the Gulf, especially down in the bottom. They used that dispersant, and that oil settled. It didn't make it go away. It just made it sink. And there's a lot of parts of the food chain that are reliant on the bottom of the ocean, and so that's still going on. So the Non-Game Wildlife Program does good things. It's continuing to do good things. I think it's a great program. I donate every year, and I hope other people remember that, too, because loons and all of our non-game critters out there, all our non-game wildlife, are so valuable to so many people.
And you don't have to wait till tax time to contribute, do you?
No, you can just go right on. You can Google it again, go on the computer, and you can just do a donation right online there.
And I had a question from a listener. The critical habitat license plates, in fact, we have one on our car. I've got the moose on my car. Does that critical habitat license plate fee go to a non-game?
Some of the money does.
Some of it does?
And
okay.
I have a loon one on my car, too. And, yes, some of the money does go. They get a match for the donations. Carol worked on that for a long time, trying to get a match so that if we got so much money and donated that they would match it through the critical license plate. And I think that's a wonderful program, too. And I know now they have the state park one, they have the moose one, they have the deer one. You know, for people who love the outdoors, this is a great way to support the outdoors and the programs and the things we love in Minnesota.
Yeah, and your backyard, the wildlife.
And your backyard.
Yeah.
Oh, Scott, I have one more thing I want to mention. You had a report earlier from a young listener, Eric, from Maryland.
Right.
Yes, and he used to go on the bird walks with us here in Brainerd.
Oh, really?
And I've known him since he was a little kid. I know his family, and they did move out to Maryland. And he's a birder. This kid was so sharp. And he he started liking birds and knowing birds from when he was young, and then the family moved out to Maryland, and it's so great to still hear from him on the Phenology Show.
Yeah, I agree. Eric, we heard from him in the last hour, and yeah, same here, and he said he and his family are going to be up here soon, so...
Yeah, they still come back to Minnesota. They still have other family here that they visit every year.
Pam, great to visit with you again. Thanks so much for sitting in for John Latimer, and you take care.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wildlife biologist Pam Perry joining us for the Phenology Show this Tuesday morning.